I'm Maggie Wall. I produce and write and do everything with the Ledgehead Report. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I am the Ledgehead Report.
One-woman show. So can you tell me a little bit about the beat of your show? Like, what is your show? What's the emphasis?
I had lots of angst coming up with the name because I didn't want it to be something like Alaska Legislative Whatever, because that's terribly boring and it sounds stodgy, and I didn't want stodgy and boring. I wanted something a little more hip, although Maggie is not much in the hip department, but something that people could relate to as a fun sort of a thing, because I think, truly believe, that if people can get into it in an easy way, they'll better understand it and can be more involved in the process, or at least be more aware of how things work and how it relates to them. And then they will feel like, I hate the used word, not enabled, what's the word? We knew empowered. I hate that word. Okay, so not to empower them, because I don't like that word, but more to make them feel like, yeah, it's okay, I understand what they're doing. Because face it, legislature is mostly gobbledygook. And it's a long process, and it's this and this and this and this. And people think that you can go in, and we saw that like when Obama was elected and when the new president is elected. People are going to think, I voted for them because they were going to make this change, and you cannot make changes like that. You can't make changes overnight. They can't do that. And the system is set up that way intentionally, so it does seem ponderous, but it allows the process to go smoothly, so we can't have somebody come in and hijack the system.
You were talking before about how excited you are about the legislature and the legislative process. Could you talk more about that?
Sometimes I say I'm such a ledge head, but I really am. And I get excited about going to vote. I mean, I just get all excited because to me, it's what living in America is about. And we get so used to it, we don't even think about it. But we get to go vote for these people. We get to say who's going to be the people making the decisions. And here in Alaska, anywhere, but especially here in Alaska, where the numbers of people are so low compared to the number of legislators, we can have a personal relationship with these people. We can know them one-on-one. Even like Lisa and all the other people in Washington, we can have that one-on-one experience with them. And that's something, that's a precious thing. And okay, it sounds naive and hokey, but it really is. And I think as Americans, we take that for granted. And I just get so excited thinking, oh, they're going to do things. And this is my state. I've lived here more than 30 years. This is my home, and I'm able to make a change. I'm able to be a part of that. And that's exciting as an Alaskan to think that any of us, all of us, can have an active part in making changes. And having worked for the legislature, I have literally seen it time and time again and covering it time and time again, where somebody will go to a meeting and say, I don't like the words because of this, because I have more background on this, because legislators can't know everything. Here's how I would recommend you do it. And they'll say, send us an email with those words. You know, fill us in. The next time it comes up to a committee, those words are now, they put those exact words in it. I mean, you have a chance in Alaska to actually say, those are my words. I wrote those words and they're in the law now. And it's easy enough to do that. And it happens a lot.
So your show happens daily.
Daily, uh-huh. It's on air daily, yes.
Yeah.
Monday through Friday.
Yeah. So how do you find the content to do a daily show? And what are you covering when the legislature isn't on?
The content, especially right now, there is more than I can even possibly cover because we've got so much going on and so many important decisions that have to be made in terms of keeping the state solvent and not having that oil money, which is like 90-some percent of where the state gets its income. It's a lot easier now because it's all online. I have gone to Juno in the past, and I'd love to again. But anybody can do this. They can watch it online. They can attend committee meetings, whatever. A big part of it is I understand what I'm seeing and hearing, and I can, as a journalist, I can pick out a good section. But the LIO is a big help. Heather at the LIO, she learned all that stuff from Lorna Steelman, and Lorna was a whiz at it. And so she's got all these things. So if somebody wanted to learn how to do it, they could do that. As far as picking what to cover, I have a lot of, having done it all these years, I have a lot of old stories that I'm now renewing, just updating them, making them more current. I like to cover things that I think of as tangential stories. When I started out, the Anchorage Daily News was still the Anchorage Daily News, and there was no way I could out-news these people. One person against a whole staff of Pulitzer Prize winners. There's no way. But what I could do is cover the stuff that they're not necessarily covering, the background, or why is this? That was the big deal. Why is this? And who are these people? They're not just all a bunch of faceless people, and especially the staff. And I used to do more of those kinds of stories then. So I'm always looking for things that are relatable. Back to that, if you can relate to it, if you can get, my goal is to get people to learn things without them realizing they're learning things. You make it interesting. And it is interesting, and I'll have people stop and say, that was the most interesting thing, or I never knew that. I'm so glad you said that. And so those are the kinds of things I do. Another thing I do, especially I will be doing here, because we're dealing with new words, new terminology. I call them ledge words, where I say, okay, here's a ledge word for you, this word, and this is what it means, and this is why it means that, or here's how they might use it, here's how you might see it used. And those are the kinds of things that I totally love, and those are the kinds of things people love as well. And so those, there's just so much out there. I kind of pick and choose, and if I have to choose, I will choose not news, not statistics, not numbers, but how can I help somebody understand something? How can I make it fun for the person to learn it? And when I have to choose, you know, how am I going to run this story, or how am I going to word it? Should I cut this? Because there's a lot of words there. I get online. You can download a lot of it. You have to edit it, which words, which segments. It's 2.5 minutes. I got to, you know, cut something. I will cut on those other things that are more newsy, heavier, and I'll leave the funner stuff in.
So where do you record?
At my house. I'm kind of having technical problems right now, which is very frustrating. I used to record it with a microphone into my, I call it my old laptop, my original laptop, which is now 10 years old, from when I started the show. And now I have a new laptop, of course, and they're all USB. My new mic doesn't, anyway, so I have a lot of little technical glitches. So I'm updating equipment right now. But I record it. I used to just plug it right into the little jack there, and that's a microphone and a computer. And really, that's all you need is a microphone and a computer.
Right. So looking at the current legislative session, can you speak about the budget and what you can predict will happen?
It's no way of knowing how the legislative session will go, and you never know. I do know that there are a lot of big decisions that have to be made. The governor says we need to make them this year because we're running out of money. He said recently that in previous years, we ran out of money and things got bleak. And we were talking a little bit about that the late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, whole neighborhoods in Anchorage were empty except for maybe two or three families, and the banks were closing, and the strip malls were all empty. There was some big crashing. I think we're a little more insulated because there's a few more different kinds of jobs. But I think I would not be surprised if people pulled up and left state. And there's a joke that we used to say back then was, good riddance, you know. If they don't want to be Alaskan through the tough times and the good times, then go away. We don't want you. But as far as the legislature, hard to say. You can never know. They need to make a decision. It's an election year. Some of them will be hesitant. They're talking using the permanent fund. People get excited when they tap into the permanent fund. I think most people realize, or they will shortly learn, that the permanent fund was set up specifically for this period, because the oil would run out and the flow would shut down. And what do we do? It's unfortunate they waited this long to do something. They could have done something 10 years ago. When I was first working in Juneau, I was the press secretary for the Senate majority, which were the Republicans then as now. And Drew Pierce, who was the Senate president, she was really, you know, pounding, working hard. We need to have a long-range fiscal plan for the state, long-range fiscal plan. Well, now we're like 15, 20 years later, and we still don't have a plan. And if they'd done something 10 years ago, we wouldn't be in the fix we're in. It's like think of your home budget. You know you've got, say, a temporary job. Well, you don't live high on the hog based on your temporary income because you know that's going to come to an end. Maybe you squirrel some away. You make decisions knowing that income is going to go down. And while they have done that to some extent, it just hasn't been done, and so we're being hit with it. We all knew this day would come. And what the governor said, what I started to say, what the governor said was, in previous years, the oil prices fluctuate. We'd have something would happen. The price of oil would go up and they'd get all this extra money in the bank and then everything would be better. That is not going to happen now. And the forecast for the next several years are for the oil prices to be way low unless there's a war or something weird happens. And I personally would prefer to deal with finances than have a war or something dreadful happen.
So before we get into the Coast Guard and that aspect of this story, could you talk a little bit about the professions you've had and how you got to Alaska and that kind of thing?
Okay. I grew up in Indiana, and when I was a kid, my father had lots of health issues, and the pollen and stuff bothered him greatly. And so we would go to Michigan for a vacation, 2-3 weeks, maybe even more, for the fresh lake air. They didn't have all the medicines they have now, so you would go to the fresh lake air. And so Indiana, you can imagine, has no large bodies of water, but Lake Michigan was there. And so when I was little, Daddy would always take us out to go watch the Coast Guard. He called them cutters, but they were the small boats would come in from their harbor, their sunset patrols, they call them. So they'd go out looking and making sure everybody in their little boats out fishing and barbecuing or whatever they're doing out there, got in safely. That's what the Coast Guard does in other places. And I just thought it was so cool. I just thought, I want to do that. I want to be one of those. Oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be one of those. And my older sister says, as long as she can remember, I used to talk like that. I don't remember that. I just know I always wanted to be one. And so when I got to be older, they did not allow women in the Coast Guard back then. This would have been the 70s. And I remember a very shy, quiet person that I was. I said, well, I'm going to make them let me in. I'm just going to make it happen. And I don't know where that came from, but it did. And so when I got to be 18, they were allowing women in the Coast Guard. And so I joined the Coast Guard. My mother cried and cried, and they would not take me to the airport. They refused.
Why?
It was the first time I'd ever gone on a plane, too. I don't know. I didn't know. My perspective of it was from my perspective, but my sister-in-law, who grew up in New York, thought the Coast Guard was the coolest thing, and so she took me to the airport. So I got a ride out there. I thought I was going to have to take a cab for the first time in my life.
Why did your parents not support you?
My younger brother said, all he remembers is mom cried and cried for months and months and months during that period. And I think looking back, it was because my brother was in Vietnam, my other brother got drafted, and she always felt only one in a family was enough in the military. And her girl, who got straight A's in school, joined the military. Well, hello. I don't know. I never asked her about it. So then I was in the Coast Guard for 4 years. I had a chance to go. I wanted to go on a ship. They were just allowing women on ships then. They did not at first, but while I was there, they started allowing women on two ships. One on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And so I came here with the intention of getting to be on a ship when I left, because this was considered overseas and an undesirable billet. So you would get your first dibs going out. I got up here. I got involved with radio because we did in Massachusetts, outside of Boston, Hull, Massachusetts. We had a small boat station. It was one of the busiest small boat stations in the country at that time. And it was like a firehouse. But instead of going to fight fires, we'd go fetch people who were sinking, fetch people who were go looking for people who were lost. And they were just starting to get into some drug intervention things back then, which now Coast Guard, a lot of their work outside is drug intervention. And we worked the radios. That was part of the shift, was everybody had to work the radios. And people would say, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. And I was really good at that. I was organized. I thought well. I could think well on my feet. I have 8 brothers and 4 sisters. My life was a lot different than most people whose lives when they're 18 years old. So I responded to things differently. And it was just like, oh, yeah, this is so cool. Good, good. So then I chose to go on into radio. And they called them radio men, radio man. I was a radio man back then. And they've since changed all the names and they got rid of all the man stuff. But I went to school in Petaluma, learned Morse code, which I thought was so cool. And then I came up here with the intention of leaving here and going on a ship, which my mother thought was way cool. She did not like me coming to Alaska. She was very upset about that. But they have such big mosquitoes, is what she told me. But she thought it was really cool to go on a ship. And so I came up here, and the very first woman ever to be stationed up here in the Coast Guard was here still. So that's how long it was. And you had asked about sexism. The gal said that, and I won't mention the captain's name because some people know of him. He has a good reputation in other areas. He said to her, I do not want you here. I did not want you here. I fought it, and I have fought it. And as far as I'm concerned, the only reason you are here is for the morale of the men. So that was kind of what it was like back then. You got pregnant, you were instantly thrown out of the Coast Guard.
You were talking a little bit before about how you personally encountered sexism. Could you talk more about that?
Well, back then I didn't know better, you know? And I think a lot of women growing up, I was not a trailblazer. I don't see myself as a trailblazer. Some people have said that. No, there were women ahead of me. My sisters, for instance, when they went to school, their hopes were to get married or be a secretary. That was kind of the highlight of their life, even if they went to college. And they were just a little bit older, 8 years older, 7, 8 years older than me. I came in at a good time because women were allowed to do things when I came in. Like, I wouldn't have been able to go to the coast in the Coast Guard if I'd been just a few years younger. So I didn't think of it as sexism. That was not even a word back then, you know? And so, for instance, I learned a lot of stuff about Penthouse, Playboy, and there was a few others that were worse, raunchier. I learned about those things because the guys would read them while we were on duty, you know, in the boathouses. This was at the small boat station, not here in Kodiak. And it was like, well, yeah, that was normal, you know? I didn't have anything to compare it to. We didn't know. So there were other things, but that was kind of what I was thinking of, where it would never be tolerated. I mean, it just... What? Or like then, you got pregnant and you got out. That was it. And a lot of women who didn't like the Coast Guard would get out. They'd get pregnant and then they wouldn't have to go out. There was kind of this sense of people then, we had talked about it even then, that either as a woman you had to be so doggone good and perfect, or you just give it up and get out. Because there was just no way that people would give you any respect unless you were absolutely the best. Because you were a girl, you know, they didn't want you. A lot of them didn't. But a lot of them did, and it was not all that way.
So you left the Coast Guard when you got married?
No, I got married in the Coast Guard here, and then we were in till our enlistment came up. And then I thought about continuing on in the Coast Guard. The ex hated it. We decided to stay here in Alaska. And so we went to Anchorage.
So what happened between then and now?
I went to school. It took me like 10 years to get my bachelor's degree. I'd taken some classes when I was in the Coast Guard. Over in Anchorage, I went to school. And then we got moved back here. And then I did some freelance writing and taking classes when I could, you know. And then as time went on, I went back to school to Anchorage, finished my degree. I had the old GI Bill. You had to use it or lose it. And they would pay me to go to school and pay my school bills, which back then were nothing. But I had to use it or lose it. And so I went back to school because I wasn't going to lose my GI Bill benefits. And then I came back here. I started the fish paper, the home port Kodiak fish paper, because I needed a job. There were not very many jobs. You know, that's the thing when you live in a small town. A lot of people in Kodiak have 4 or 5 or 6 odd jobs because they really are. That's how you have to live, right? So I created my job. I had a newspaper for, I think, 3 years, fisheries paper. It was once a month. And we just covered fisheries. It was when fisheries was pretty high activity, a lot of activity still in the fisheries here. And then, I don't know. I don't pay that much attention to what I've done. I did work one summer in Michigan at a newspaper, decided I didn't like that at all. It was strange to live someplace else after having lived in Kodiak, where everything is so... The strange thing about living in Marquette, Michigan, was that there were virtually nobody who wasn't white. And it took me a long time to figure that out. And that was very strange, having lived here. So then I come back here. I did work a little stint at the Harbor Master's office at one point. I volunteered at KMXT many years ago. I worked here for a while back then when we were in the other building working with John Pfeiffer. That was a long time ago. And I don't know how. I don't know. I somehow have managed to maintain freelancing, mostly freelancing and things like that.
What are you doing now in addition to the Ledgehead Report?
I went back to school online, got a master's degree in internet marketing, which is where I'm going, and where everything is going is online. How to make money online, how to make your business make money online. It's not as easy as people think. I design websites. I'm doing more of my own stuff. I had some health issues, so that can maybe put me back a ways, but now I'm feeling better and back to getting my own things online, my own online businesses. I also work part-time at the base post office Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays.
Could you talk a little bit about the Prison Dam event when you were in the Coast Guard?
Sure. Prison Dam was a cruise ship. They have a new one, and I don't know why you would name a new one the same name as one that sank, but they have a new Prison Dam. Prison Dam was, this was in the fall, it was my last, it was just like a weird little thing, it was my last night shift. If it had any other time, I would have missed it entirely. It was the biggest Coast Guard rescue in history until New Orleans. They counted that as a sea rescue. The sea came in and they rescued all those people in New Orleans, so they had more numbers. I think it was 512 people, and they all lived. And it was in Southeast. The Coast Guard here was very involved in it. John Whidden was one of the big hero pilots. He's still here. He's down at, is it Island Seafoods? The little seafood place. Anyway, John Whidden, who is still here in town, he doesn't talk about it, but he was one of the big hero pilots. And the weather was horrible. It was one of those horrible times. And I was working, it was Morse code. And I was the one that got the SOS message. He sent SOS, SOS, SOS. This is the call sign for the Prison Dam. And then the guy swapped them over to me because we sat two in a watch. One would listen and, you know, take care of whatever was going on. And another one free to take all the messages. Back then, we used to take a lot of messages. It was all just numbers and gobbledygook. And, boy, you had to be good with your Morse code. It was fisheries report from high seas fishing vessels. The U.S. 200-mile limit went in effect in 1976. This was in 79. So they had people, observers, go on these Russian and foreign fleet boats, and then they would send back observer messages. And it was all in Morse code, just pages and pages and numbers and numbers and numbers. And so we had somebody who would answer their message and then somebody who would take the message. I was taking the message. And to be honest, I was slacking off, and I was actually crashed behind the radio equipment, which you're never supposed to do, but it was my last midwatch, and I was getting out of the Coast Guard. And it was like, SOS, whoa, you know, whoa. And he said, SOS, SOS, SOS. It was the perfect textbook SOS. This is the MS, whatever it was, Prince and Dam, MS Dis Prince and Dam. And he said, He used words I didn't understand, but I just kept typing because we typed Morse code. You know, they would type, and it was just brain-to-finger thing. He said, fire, fire in the engine room. And I'll never forget that. Fire, fire in the engine room. And he said CO2, but I didn't understand what he was saying. They had doused it with CO2, right? I just kept typing the message. And basically, at that point, they wanted just to let the Coast Guard know they were having problems. They weren't sure if it was a big problem, but they were going to need some help. But they weren't sure what help they needed. And so then we took it into the chief, and it started everything. You notify the air station. And before the night was over, they had fully engulfed in flames, and they were helping, you know, it just got to be a huge, big rescue because there were 512 people. They had later gone into lifeboats, and they were in this horrible storm in Southeast, and it was like one of the biggest storms, you know, as it often is in the fall, and they were able to rescue them.
Can you let me know what year this was?
1980. It would have been like October 28th, 1980 or something like that.
What years were you in the Coast Guard?
76 to 80.
Okay. Is there some kind of recent thing to do with the prison dam? I feel like I haven't.
Oh, well, here's a weird thing to do with the prison dam. Somebody wrote a book about it, and he wrote it out of Florida, and he didn't even bother to contact anybody here, which I thought was very offensive. So that was kind of weird. I sent a copy to my mom because it had the message in it. I was the one that got the message, you know. That was like way cool. SOS, SOS. And it was in Morse code. So it was did-it-it-da-da-da-did-it-it-did-it-it-da-da-da-did-it-it-da-da-da-did-it-it. And you just hardly ever hear those. And it was a perfect textbook message. You couldn't have asked more. I mean, as a radio operator, it was like, whoa, even though those people were in trouble. But it was like, it was just way cool. It was way cool. And I don't think about it much. We all got awards from Congress for working to save 512 people.
Wow.
Yeah, I had it framed. And then here was what was weird. One time it was after I moved back to Kodiak. We went to Anchorage, lived there for a while, moved back. And I was in what was Dr. Bob's old office, which I don't even know what is in that building anymore. It's kind of catty corner up the hill from the Legislative Information Office, overlooks the Ford dealership. And I was reading, you know, waiting in line, you know, reading the old magazines. And there was an ad for that very same trip. And it said, an adventure of the lifetime. And I got permission. I ripped it out. And I framed it with my other one, my other thing from Congress. So it's like really a kind of a fun thing. It was like, adventure of lifetime. Yeah, I bet that was the adventure of those poor folks' lifetime.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to share with the listeners?
No. Oh, yes. This is a Ledgehead thing. Okay.
Okay.
I think it's important that people pay attention. I know we all have a bazillion things going on in our lives, and legislature can be hard to follow. But if you would do, like that one book says, just pick six. Don't even do six. Do two. Do one. Find something that you will be concerned about if they cut, because there's a very good chance they're going to cut everything. And just follow it. And if all you do is follow it so you're more aware of what's going on, you know, they'll be doing this again next year. But we need to make some serious decisions in the state about what they're going to do to fund operations. And the state's funding is so much a big part of all the communities. It will trickle down and affect everybody greatly. So it's important that people, like I tell them on the show, you know, Maggie's technique for this, and I do this all the time. I look at something, there's a lot of stuff online, if it's boring or I don't understand it, forget it. I move on. Move on to something that you can understand. And if nothing else, you at least know where it's at to go back to it. And that's how I learn a lot of things. That's how I find stories. I go flipping through some of those pages. And it's really important. And Heather down at the LIO, she just is a wonderful gal. And she will do everything to help you. And you can track bills. Say, okay, I'm interested in school funding. She can set it up so they'll send you an email whenever there's something going on with school funding. So they're, you know, fisheries. They'll send you an email every time. The state's computer does that. And so there are ways to follow the legislature. And even if all you do is read the headlines on your email, that's great. That is wonderful because that'll help you be more aware and help be involved in making these big decisions we have to make in the next couple of years.
Well, thank you for joining us for Talk of the Rock.
Well, I'm glad. It was lots of fun. It was enjoyable. And like I said, don't get bogged down with legislative stuff. Just pick it and choose it and just be more aware of what's going on.
All right, great. This was Talk of the Rock. Thanks for tuning in.